I'm Craig Fisher, and this is Inside Talent.
Hello, hello, welcome everyone to our Inside Talent live webcast. We are live on LinkedIn, my YouTube channel, places far and near, possibly some of our participants' channels. This will be a podcast in the rebooted Inside Talent podcast series that is occasionally very regular and occasionally very quarterly. We are here today to talk about leveraging AI and global labor market analytics in recruitment marketing. So we're going to talk to you about how to best utilize the tools available to you, right, to do recruitment marketing better. This is important for anyone in HR, talent acquisition, employer branding, talent analytics, talent operations, talent attraction, talent management. There's going to be something here for everyone. So we welcome you and welcome to my guests. I have Erica Oliver, who is the Chief Product Officer for Horsefly, Will Crandall, who is the CEO for Horsefly, and Yaz Dalal, who is Jovio's, what do you call yourself now?
Chief Growth Officer.
Chief Growth Officer, yeah.
Sounds good, right? Sounds fancy.
It does sound fancy. I love the growth terminology. In theory, that's what it's all about. And this is our first time to have Yaz with us, and we're very excited. He's very knowledgeable about programmatic advertising, recruitment marketing, SEO, and many other things that are near and dear to my heart. So this is going to be fun. And so everyone, how are you doing? Erica, let's start with you.
Doing great. I'm like, it's Tuesday. It's been a busy month already, and it's only the 5th. But that's good. I feel like the economy is starting to open up a little bit. Hopefully I didn't jinx it. So I'm good. Busy, but busy is good.
All right, Will, how about you? And why don't you tell us a little bit about Horsefly real quick for those of us in the audience that haven't heard.
Yeah, I'm doing great, mate. So yeah, Horsefly is basically a global labor market insight tool that allows you to explore all manner of labor market insights, no matter how granular or complex your searches are. We're able to provide the insights.
Nice. All right. And Erica, I'm with you on that very busy month, even though it's only the 5th. We will be at the TalentNet Live Conference this coming Friday, the 8th, next door to Yeti's headquarters. We were going to be at Yeti's headquarters, but we outgrew the space. So we're going to be next door at a theater. It's going to be amazing. Thank you, Yeti, for putting us up there. And Yaz, you're already in Austin. Tell us what's going on with you and tell us a little bit about Jovio.
Sure. Well, I'm happy to be in Austin. It's nice and warm out there today. I'm super excited to be with you and also excited for this Friday at TalentNet Live, because that is one of the reasons I'm here in Austin, besides meeting clients. I'm newish. I've been at Jovio for less than a year and very excited to be at the firm. But just to give you a quick overview of what Jovio is, it's essentially performance marketing that helps great employers find great people. And so our whole premise is that recruiters deserve a simple and efficient talent attraction platform. And so that's what we deliver, self-driving talent attraction. Recruiters don't need to spend hours learning new tools or processes. It's fully AI driven, it's fully automated. And basically what we're delivering is job distribution, candidate matching, and doing it with the precision of a modern autopilot system. So this is more or less what Jovio is. And we're working with clients around the world to deliver that kind of performance for them.
All right. So we've got some comments already from the audience. Scott, greetings from Kansas City. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Max. Yeah. We've got Max logging in from Dublin. Excellent. Yeah. Max. And we've got Marcelo. Hello, everyone. Greetings from Buenos Aires, Argentina. All right. Cool. Okay. This is going to be fun. We are so global today, my friends.
Love it. I'm curious about Marcelo, because my brother-in-law is also an Argentinian named Marcelo, but I don't think it's the same one.
That would be amazing if that were possible. So one thing I like about having a global audience here is that the details I get about the employment market from Horsefly, when I'm working with my customers, right? I'm a consultant in the talent industry, and I am an advisor to Fortune 500 companies and enterprise employers on their talent attraction process, their tech selection and sort of how to plug and play with it, and their talent attraction and candidate experience. And I use analytics tools all the time, and Horsefly gives me global information that I don't get everywhere. So welcome to all of our global friends. Marcella says, I believe that he is not your brother-in-law.
Good to know.
Okay. Adrian is here from Reading. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, yeah. And Karen from Canada. All right. Wow. Look at us go. Ooh. All right. So let's talk a little bit about understanding global labor market analytics and why it's important to recruitment marketing. So Erica, I'm going to start with, I'm going to pick on you again.
Okay.
What makes labor market analytics indispensable in today's global hiring landscape?
Yeah, I'd say, I think there are a lot of things, and Yaz will probably share his thoughts as well. But the number one thing is, how do you optimize the budget you have for recruitment marketing? And the best way to do that is leveraging data to understand the best locations to reach your target talent. You know, I think, you know, in the olden days, you know, back when it was like putting an ad in the newspaper or sometimes even an ad in Craigslist, which is crazy to even say that out loud now, yeah. You know, it was a bit of the post and pray approach. And, you know, companies don't have that kind of budget to work with, or they don't want to work with it in that way. So I think in a nutshell, the criticality of leveraging labor market analytics helps you hone in on how to best spend those dollars and spend on those avenues.
So I like your reference to the olden days.
I earned it. Come on, Craig.
I would spend hours creating full page ads for the Dallas Morning News.
Wow.
Wow.
Right. And I mean, yes, I think our messaging was targeted, but we didn't have the same information that we have today to really dial it in. And so when I think olden days, I think of like Western movies. And so you've got the guy with the scatter gun, right? He's got the pump action shotgun. You can shoot three people at a distance of, you know, 5 feet. But the scary guy is the sharpshooter, right? With the rifle.
Exactly.
And that's what we need to dial in, because we can't afford all the bullets anymore. Exactly. Why is that? Because bullets are clicks.
Yep.
And clicks cost money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you don't want everyone to click.
That's it.
Well, I think, you know, the not to continue this very macabre analogy.
Please do.
But in the Old West, you didn't hire the gun for hire based on how many bullets they were going to use. The way a bounty works is you pay on outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Dead or alive. In our business, it's always alive, first of all. but you're paying for an outcome. Here's who we need. It's on a poster. Go get them. You are deputed by the court to go get this person. And you get paid whether, you know, only when you bring that person back. That's it.
Love it.
So go ahead. I was just going to say, we've got more data. We've got pay for outcome. We've got a wanted poster, which is sort of a persona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is making we're writing a blog right now.
I think so. Love this.
Well, you know, Craig, there's, sorry, Will, go ahead.
No, go on. Yeah, so you're more interesting.
That's not true. But as thinking about your question around labor market analytics, you know, obviously, we know the last 25, 30 years, especially with compute technology, everything is data driven. So to me, and in the environment that we're working in, labor market analytics, the value that a company like a Horsefly delivers is critical, because you can trust in data, and then it allows you to make data-driven decision-making. So you can look at employment rates, skill shortages, industry growth. But there's also the ability for using that data to question and change things that maybe have come down on from on high without a lot of thought. And I'll just tell you quickly this story from a client of mine a few years ago, very major telco in the United States. That's got, you know, 5,000 stores where they're selling cell phones. And they had a language requirement. They said 20% of all in-store staff must be Spanish fluent. And this is a do or die edict, and we can't fail in a single market. Okay, but it's not working in like dozens of markets across the United States. Well, that's unacceptable. You dive in, I remember my team and I did a whole labor market study on Bend, Oregon. Now, the data may have changed. This is from several years ago. But at the time, the proportion of demographics in Bend, Oregon skewed white. It was, I think, 90% plus white. The number of Hispanics in Bend, Oregon was single digits. I believe it was 2%. And of those, less than half spoke Spanish. You're not going to hit that metric. Stop trying. Stop spending on bullets. They were spending on so many clicks to find these Spanish fluent speakers that do not exist. And by the way, while our business wasn't their business outcome, but the reality is maybe you don't need Spanish speakers in those stores in Bend, Oregon, because your clients aren't speaking Spanish. So to me, there's a huge role to play for labor market analytics in that kind of decision-making.
100%. And I think, you know, thinking about how different markets are globally. So like, you know, people have to become experts different locations when you're hiring globally, the skills, the job titles, the language used in each of the locations is completely different. Competitor landscape is completely different. Cost of living is completely different. So, yeah, I think that's where the challenge that's facing people who aren't using, going into these markets blind, who aren't using labor market insights.
So we're touching on my next question, which is to share an example of how labor market data has revealed unexpected opportunities, right, or challenges in global talent acquisition. And I've got a good story for this. And Yaz, it's similar to your story, and it does involve Bend, Oregon.
They're getting a lot of pressure from this meeting today.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you look at employer ad campaigns, the Northwest is constantly an issue, and pretty much across the board, right? So there are certain areas that are constantly struggling to get candidates. Anyway, I'm doing a recruitment marketing job for a major healthcare company, one of the largest in the world, and they have offices all over the country, like in, you know, shopping centers and strip malls and things like that. And I'll just go ahead and say it, the company's called DaVita Healthcare, right? So it's kidney care. They've got shops everywhere. And we were hearing complaints from their offices in the Pacific Northwest that they weren't getting applicants at all. And, you know, these things change from month to month, but this was consistent. And so we looked at the market analytics, and the data showed that there are nurses there. There are enough nurses there that we shouldn't have these kinds of complaints. And within the salary range, and the competitive landscape was okay, so the share of voice should have been fine. So I thought and I thought and I thought and I thought, and I went to the recruitment marketing partner and I said, can I see how these campaigns are rolling out? And I found out that they were starting all campaigns with the same budget on Monday morning at 6 a.m. on the East Coast. And by the time they got to the West Coast, the money was all spent. Wow. Nobody realized it. Wow. And that happens, right? But you have to know, is there a chance first?
Yeah.
And so I figured out, yeah, we should have a fighting chance here. Why don't we start these campaigns in the center of the country and go this way at 10 a.m. on Monday and not compete for all those early hours? And my gosh, did we save like $200,000 quickly and got better results.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Does anyone else have an example? Because I just took up a lot of time, I feel like.
How do you follow that? That's so compelling.
It's in my book. Okay. So Gary Morgan says pay for outcome, basically contingent-based recruiting. I mean, I like that. It's not wrong.
Yeah.
And Gary says, I love that. I was just asked to source a candidate who's fluent in Japanese and English in Novi, Michigan.
Wow.
They might say Novi there. I'm not sure. All right. Fluent in Japanese. Well, it does happen. In Pennsylvania, right, we had a warehouse for Ross Dress for Less, in which warehouse workers spoke a total of 23 different languages.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So that was crazy. Okay. Moving on. We're going to talk about the impact of AI and analytics on recruitment marketing a little further. We're going to work in a little more of the AI question. And so, Yaz, I'm going to start with you this time. How do recruitment marketing strategies shift when informed by labor market analytics?
So I think, first of all, we already talked about some of this. Analytics help us identify high demand roles and skills, so you can focus where the talent gap is the most serious. Why is that important? Because it drives efficiency, but it also helps attract the right candidates. And the other aspect that I think is really critical is around job transferability. So if I think about another client that we have in Western Canada, they're looking for hoist operators for mining. Now, there's X number of hoist operators that will exist because they do that job currently. But from a skills perspective, there are probably a dozen other jobs or more where 80-90% of those skills are directly transferable to hoist operator in a mining environment. And in fact, one of the data studies that we did was to identify prior roles or jobs that those hoist operators in that function had done. And so we see, okay, actually, security guard in an industrial environment is something that's very related. Warehouse and stockroom taker, also related. People working in moving companies. And so you can start to transfer skill sets across based on those analytics that you've done on the available labor market. So I think this is one. The other, which you already talked about, is geo-targeting and understanding what shortages we have around, for instance, Spanish language. But I think the other one, which shouldn't be overlooked, is we know that there are some major online platforms that people use for looking for a job. And yet people are always surprised to find out that even though there's four or five, quote unquote, large job boards or the Indeeds and LinkedIns of the world or Google or even Twitter trying to launch a job board, there's actually tens of thousands of them around the world because they get super niche. And so another aspect of labor market analytics, the way we're leveraging it at Jovio, is to kind of uncover insights into the employment journey, into the candidate behavior. Where do they spend their time when they're looking for their next role or their next gig? Is it just job search platforms? Is it, you know, functional pages, like I'm making this one up, but could it be a nurse's sort of message board in your local suburb that's not even specific to the whole metro area of a New York or a Chicago or a Portland, Oregon? It's just for your suburb, which happens to have two huge hospitals. And so there's a message board for nurses. Should we be looking there? What's their behavior? How much time do they spend there evaluating roles, discussing salaries, benefits, et cetera? So I think labor market analysts can uncover a lot of this kind of information and behavior as well.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And that's getting down to the postcard level of detail right there, which I love, right? I like finding the random Facebook user group, right, for nurses, or the specific neighborhood next door group on the Next Door app, where you could find people like this, right, centered around a specific area where there's a bunch of apartments where nurses live. This is great stuff. And so, Will, Erica, did you guys have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting and why Yovio was so exciting. We when I met Yaz for the first time, because we have a lot of shared sort of goals and visions for the industry. And, you know, to give you an example of the type of things that we're working on, like over a span of a decade, we've been collecting profiles and a little bit labor market data points. We built this chronologically ordered graph of database of historic to current data. And it basically looks like a universe of keywords like companies, skills, job titles. And, you know, we've been mapping them constellations that Yaz is talking about. So, you know, you can imagine that we're effectively able to, with astonishing accuracy, is complete a profile based on limited input and even predict the future potential career development of a profile. You know, it plays really well with skill-based hiring and associated adjacency of keywords. And I think that's where the market's going, you know, understanding the potential of a profile rather than just what does it say on it.
So I'm going to agree with that for sure. All right. You know, there are large talent intelligence platforms now. I'm not going to name names, but they're very expensive. And they do claim that they will tell you where a candidate's going. I think there are different ways to get at that. And AI is certainly one of them, right? So this is going to be to everyone, whoever wants to answer, or everyone can answer. How should we be utilizing AI, right, in this fashion to do talent intelligence and inform recruitment marketing? And before we answer that, I want to just, Adrian said we froze the last 5 minutes. So that had to have been on his computer. But then he also, before that, said he's fluent in 4 languages and has a working proficiency in another 7. So he can read and understand, but not talk. That must help. And I just want to say, Adrian, how's bragging camp going?
I would reframe his question, though, Craig, to say, for a lot of people, I mean, outside the U.S. especially, being multilingual is not unusual. So right. he might not be bragging. I would almost say, I think what he's asking is, I always thought this was normal, but if it's not, how do I transform this into a marketable skill? And yeah, especially in this coming era, how is my language capability going to be useful, even if it's only a 50% capability in certain languages where I can only read but not speak or write? I think that's really interesting.
And I agree. And Adrian, why only 4? I mean, come on.
Call them out. Let's go. Call them out.
All right. So the question is, how should we be using AI to inform our recruitment marketing goals? And talent intelligence is certainly a big factor here.
I mean, I'm happy to start. And when I was speaking to some of the magicians that work in, you know, in our magicians workshop, which is where we generate all of our AI-led products, you know, they would say, oh, you know, Yaz, we've got an ONET-based job and occupation classifier. We're training it using BERT, which is a transformer-based architecture. And we use XML Robert-based for this. And I don't think that's, first of all, it's starting to go over my head, but I don't think it's really relevant for us. But what I might say is what's the form of AI that we're most familiar with right now, I would say in the general population, is around generative AI, large language models, ChatGPT. So, you know, a couple of examples that I'll give is job content, optimizing job content through AI. So that's taking job titles, geolocations, and using data and generative AI, you know, leveraging a large language model, basically a ChatGPT equivalent, to give it a prompt, automatically generate those prompts on our end, incorporate the recommendations so that we can optimize those job titles in those locations. Why is that important? Because it maximizes the job title visibility across a network of publisher sites, but it also optimizes for click-through rates, which is, you know, the bullets that we were talking about. One of the also positive impacts of that is it helps to remove bias from job descriptions. And so we can give a specific prompt that, you know, says, go through this, identify any words or phrases that would imply bias and remove them. And you have to imagine that when I say we, it's not we as a human, it's the system that we've designed to do that. So I think that's one example. Another one is around personalized job recommendations. So evaluating a profile or evaluating input into a conversational AI to say, let's go throw back to my previous example. Okay, you're a security guard and you're working in this, you know, somewhat dangerous work environment in this chemical or industrial plant. But by the way, a number of folks with your background have also gone on to become hoist operators at this mining company. And it's 40 miles from where you live, but that's an acceptable commute because the speed limit's, you know, 80 miles an hour, whatever. That level of detail in a recommendation can be, frankly, motivating to someone to hear from a robot on basically a chat screen, this kind of nuanced recommendation that clearly shows you, hey, I've been seen, I've been heard. They understand what I'm looking for. I think that can be very powerful. So just a couple of examples of matching AI with recruitment marketing goals.
Yeah, I think what's very exciting about that, Yaz, is that all the data points you've used to train your models that you've collected over time, it's like, it's so valuable that we're not going into it like a vanilla AI type thing. You've got all this training data that you've used to be able to sort of provide these insights. So that's amazing.
You know, I was talking just one more thing, because I try to be like that person in Office Space who's between the engineers and the salespeople. You know, I'm a people person. Hopefully my job is not going to be impacted like his was. But I was talking to another of our engineers before, and they were talking about using autoregression models. That sounds really fancy. You know what autoregression model basically means in this context? It means that when you're chatting with the chatbot, it's taking into account everything you said in previous lines and using that to inform what it says next. That's all. That's awesome. That's what it should do. Anything that we imagine it can do, it should just do it. And I think that's a great example of that.
Yeah, so I'll agree 100%. I've been building custom GPTs for my customers and training it with good examples of outcomes, right? I'm building one for Holland America Cruise Lines and Princess Cruise Lines right now that takes all of their tone of voice, brand standards, messaging suggestions, past messages, past successful messages, and basically building an outreach engine. So, right, it's going to have their sparky voice, and it's going to have all of the words that they like to use and the way they like to use them, and it will spit out. Right, when you build a custom GPT, you get four buttons on the home screen that basically are, these are your quick to-dos. But then you can ask it anything and it will come with a list of things you should ask me, which is great. Wow. And so, you know, the learning is quick if you understand how to ask the question, right? So the prompts are important. And the data that you use is not all good, but the best thing about AI, right, is that it summarizes so well and so quickly. And so a training manual that might have taken an individual weeks to consume previously can be boiled down into 10 bullet points.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like that we've got endless possibilities for persona building and message, you know, dialing and, you know, all of the sort of campaign strategies that we are coming to rely on. And anyone that says email is dead and text messaging is dead and ad campaigns, they don't work anymore. I'm here to tell you, I don't care what you hear about the way Google is changing search. It's still going to be search. And every job search starts with a search bar somewhere. And so, Yaz, your point about optimizing job titles and keywords and removing bias, so valid. I mean, even now, and maybe even more so now, because if you go to search for your own jobs and you don't use the exact job title that your internal organization uses, but you use the generic title that a job seeker would look for, and you add a location near it, right? Because that's what happens in search engines still, right? They want to find things near you, even if it's remote work, doesn't matter. And you use the word jobs, which is what you're going to do. Where do your jobs come up in those search results? That's your share of voice for that area. And if your share of voice is not good because of bad SEO, there's no excuse for that now, I don't think, right?
Even today, Craig, I'm looking for salespeople. I'm hiring myself. And there's about 1,450 billion ways a salesperson will refer to themselves in their job title. And if you go on some of the major job boards or LinkedIn or wherever, it is, you end up having to put dozens and dozens and dozens of search terms to try and find what you're looking for. And that's for, frankly, a very generic kind of role. Now imagine the same thing for hoist operator. Imagine the same thing for security guard. Imagine the same thing for other roles that might have a dozen different names. And then once you go beyond the English-speaking world, multiply that by every other language that you're recruiting in.
Yeah, right. And so OpenAI is really good at giving you synonyms, right? So you can even build a Boolean string of synonyms for sales roles. Oddly, growth is big.
Not odd. We're making growth happen. Don't worry.
Growth is real. All right. Okay. So synergizing analytics with recruitment marketing is sort of our next topic. And so I'm going to start, Will, this time with you. You're lucky. Your number's up. Can you think of a specific campaign or strategy that succeeded due to the integration of AI and labor market analytics?
Yeah, I think Erica's really close with our customers, so she's probably a better answering this question than me. But I think the basic output of what we do, so more like the execution. So thinking about Jovio and Horsefly, I think our clients always seek to take the Horsefly insights and turn them into actionable strategies. And I think the, you know, this combination of AI and labor market insights, platforms like Jovio can simplify the process significantly. So, you know, the execution of the process significantly. So, yeah, I think Erica might have a better example of something that's actually happened.
Send me up, got some construction over here. Yeah, so I am thinking of one client we have in particular, also a recruitment marketing firm. I would say, like, trying to think what I can share. I will say that these guys do an incredible job of leveraging our data to win clients on their own, to gain recruitment marketing initiatives. And so I'm thinking one client in particular, we've got a couple of clients in this way, where it's the data has driven how they devise the recruitment marketing strategy. It impacts how they go to market in terms of clients that they're going after. And I mean, the third thing is it's made them a whole lot of money. So for them, really honing in on, I mean, like the ROI in leveraging our analytics has been exponential. on both fronts. So what greater synergy is that than to use data to make money? It's growth, right, Az? Growth.
Absolutely.
I think,
you know, from my side, the one that comes to mind is we're using AI and machine learning to drive candidate to job matching. And like we've talked about a couple of times, not just the candidate profile, but the specific skills to the jobs that are available. And, you know, if you're looking in the news right now, literature and all the different pundits within our space, skills-based hiring, there's a number of folks with pretty prominent names who are advocating for getting rid of the resume, although I think we've heard that sort of doomsday bell many, many times over the last few decades, but really switching from experience-based CV to skills-based. And whether that happens or not, we're helping clients do that already today. Rather than look through where have you worked, what have you done, it's what have you learned and how did you use it in what you do that's starting to matter more and more. Now, that's from a skills perspective, but there are other attributes that obviously a lot of companies around the world are focused on. And even though there's a lot of headlines about the death of DEI, the reality is there is still a major push, even if it's not as showy. And so I'll share with you that we've had this use case a number of times in the past year where we are leveraging a large language model and a set of algorithms that we've developed to predict to a pretty high 95%, 98% plus probability gender. We're not saying that this person is this gender or is not that gender. We're saying there is this probability that they are likely to be this gender, which is your target focus. And obviously that needs to be within the confines of regulatory and laws within individual countries, but where gender targeting is permitted, that has been a huge win for a large number of our clients. The ability to look not just at current applicants, but their entire talent pool. I mean, we haven't talked a lot about talent pools today, but talent pools are so critical because the hardest thing for a company to do is to get you interested in them. Your talent pool, which is that the number of people who have previously applied, they're already interested. They already asked you out. All you need to do now is tell them that you're ready. So that, I think, has been a very powerful outcome for a lot of our clients is that very specific integration, matching between our AI capability for predicting with probability, right? So it's not always 100%, to what are the pressures they have from a labor market perspective, which in this case was gender.
So I love that you're bringing up a talent pool because we were told a few years ago that talent pools aren't real. And that it's constantly a new search and everything starts with sourcing, which I don't agree with. Because in marketing terms, we use terms like awake the dead campaign, right? So awake the dead campaign is you've got a talent pool, people who have previously applied, maybe they got an interview, maybe they did not, but you did your best to end things on a good note and say, stay tuned, we'd love to talk to you later, right? But you haven't talked to them in a few months. And so you want to reach back out to them and say, hey, are you cool with still getting updates? And right, there's a yes or no question. They're kind of opting into text messages or advertisements or emails or phone calls. That's a wake the dead campaign. And that is to your talent pool. You do have one. It does exist. And so just because you don't have a talent community doesn't mean you don't have a talent pool. Now, talent community, yeah, are you going to keep people warm forever and ever and ever? No, they're going to take a job, right? So they're still in your talent pool. So, yeah, as I love that you bring that up. I'll give one quick example of how I recently use AI and talent analytics to market analytics to figure out an interesting question. So we had a customer in Pennsylvania trying to attract hourly workers, and the campaigns were all focused in Pennsylvania. And so we weren't getting the traction we needed. And so I started looking at the map and I figured out that there were people in Virginia who were a whole lot closer to Washington, D.C. than they were to anywhere in Pennsylvania. But it would take them three times as long to get to Washington, D.C. as it would to get to where our customer was in Pennsylvania. And so we spread that net. And I mean, it was magic. We got a ton of people applying because the drive is just so much easier. So even though it's across state lines and, you know, this and that, no big deal. So I asked AI, I said, calculate for me the driving time to get from here to there. I could have probably figured it out by looking at every highway and speed limit and all these things, but boy, AI certainly shortened my process in that situation. All right. Okay, so are there challenges that companies face in trying to incorporate AI with their recruitment marketing efforts? And then we'll talk about how to overcome them. Any thoughts?
I'm happy to share a few thoughts, and then curious to learn also more from Will and Erica around from a labor analytics perspective. But I think there are a couple of challenges, and they're really, really important. We talked about regulatory requirements a minute ago. I think privacy concerns, the risk of perpetuating bias are two really significant ones. And maybe also to a slightly lesser extent, but equally important, data integration and the complexity behind that. So we've heard all these phrases before, garbage in, garbage out. That's very real. Bias in, bias out is one of the unfortunate outcomes of that. So it's important for our clients that we invest in really robust data management systems. They're trusting us for that. They're trusting us for the expertise to ensure that that integration is seamless, that the insights that we're incorporating are real time. But I think the two key obstacles that we know are critical to our clients, privacy and bias. Privacy, you know, we're heavily relying on personal and professional data. So we take pains to make sure that data never sits with us. We layer our tech on top of our clients' data where their data already lives, because we've got to pay attention to GDPR. We've got to pay attention to, California tends to be the most strict in the United States, so we adhere to the California laws. How do we implement transparent data handling practices? How do we maintain candidate trust? I think privacy is critical in all of this. And the second is bias. How do we, there's been a lot of news about this. I think some pretty prominent companies in the last two or three years who, in their excitement to leverage their AI know-how, because they are some of the big AI players that tried this, they ended up being accused of unfair hiring practices. In a way, good that that happened, because it made it real for everyone else. But in order to mitigate this, we're always encouraging our clients, regularly audit your AI models for bias. And if you're using us, we'll show you how we're doing that. But any vendor who says that they're using AI, we need to make sure that there's transparency and daylight shone into that. How do we ensure a diverse set of data is used for training algorithms? Otherwise, you might go to one of those image generators and say, show me a doctor, and it's a white male 90% of the time, right? That's bias in, bias out. How do we ensure that there is human oversight incorporated into the AI decision-making process, so we can make sure that all those technological inputs are balanced with ethical considerations? We can't forget that AI cannot work completely on its own for now. It needs to have human oversight. So I think these are two main areas that our clients, that we encourage them to be very mindful of: privacy and bias.
Yeah, it's so important. I think this guy called Bob Pulver, who's trying to create a standard for the auditing, which is, we're following closely. But yeah, from our side, I think in terms of implementing leadership, understanding and buy-in is so important. You know, lack of the sort of leadership buy-in limits the opportunity for the operational team to leverage the insights to sort of that really make an impact. So, you know, we've been helping all our customers educate the value and potential ROI from the AI labor market insights, so it fosters support, you know, even demonstrating specific examples of how our analytics have led to successful outcomes, which went over the skeptics. And I think that that's probably the biggest challenge we see. On the opportunity side, you know, people who are leveraging the insight, showing the ROI, able to paint the picture of the value that they're getting. We've seen people like Erica is closer to them, but we've seen people's careers absolutely fly because they're able to do what was previously left to a team of 25 sort of workforce planners to implement. So, yeah, I think they're the two challenging opportunities for me.
So I'm a big fan of all of this advice. I think buy-in is big. I encourage our audience, right? If you're in talent acquisition or recruiting, if you have good outcomes utilizing these tools and you're able to, you know, prevent bias or improve bias, or just, you know, use the tools in a smart and interesting way that proves good ROI, please write those case studies, right? We need to see them. We need a repository of them, and I may have to build it myself, but even if we do, I encourage you to start making notes. Every time something good happens, take a screenshot of it and put it in a document online in your Google Docs, and keep a running list of cool things that you were able to accomplish and the good outcomes and any attaboys that you get or attagirls. And let's make the case. I'm a big fan. So a couple of comments from the audience. Nick says that any roles we get through our talent pool is our first point of call, as it should be. Candidates are a lot more receptive when they've signed up voluntarily instead of their regular job board search. 100% agree. This is old world knowledge. You don't start afresh. In my opinion, no offense, Glenn, Kathy, you don't start a fresh sourcing effort outside of your own database the minute you get a job rec, right? There are people who are waiting in line in your database. Okay. Now you might have to source your own database in order to get the outcome here. Okay. Next comment. Loved your insights around AI and bias. Yes. We at Rocket Power, go Rocket Power, wrote an article about this very topic. We will go check that out. So, Marcelo, if you want to drop a link, we'll read it. And then Angelo, yeah, please share the link to this article. Okay, well, look, I don't have to say it, I suppose. all right, so closing thoughts on all of this. I think we've discussed a number of really good things. I think we've really highlighted how AI and market analytics can all play together to do really good things for recruitment marketing and vice versa. And, you know, thinking outside the box, this is all outside the box thinking, right? I mean, we're just now starting to combine all these things to get these really good outcomes. So, you know, any parting thoughts, questions from the audience or thoughts from the panelists on, you know, things that you'd like to see, things we need to do better or things that are happening that we didn't get to touch on.
I love your idea of building a repository of use cases from your community. Do you find that within your community, people are sharing success stories anyway? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we'll see it at the conference coming up. I mean, so I may be building a custom GPT live for the audience during the event. And I, you know, when I show tools, I always get good use cases come out of the audience.
Love it, love it. I would say the only parting thought I have is around your question around like the challenges around AI. I just feel like some people are resistant to things that are new or something not like what they've always done, whether it's AI overall or a new tool. It's like if it's not what they've always done, there's always tends to be resistance to it. And so I would say that's the biggest challenge that I've seen, and I think the biggest opportunity, is just try. If you have access to a new tool, try it. You know, before you decide that ChatGPT or AI or what have you isn't for you, just try it first before you decide that's not for you. So I just wanted to say that as a parting thought, with an open mind on top of it. If you already think it's going to be trash, then, you know, the mindset you walk in with is the mindset that you walk out with.
I love that you said that, Erica, because the pace of expectation amongst consumers and all of us has increased so dramatically. I think people are a lot braver now to try things. I think this early adopter thing model is changing. We're all early adopters. And I'm thinking about talent pools, and I'm thinking about, just in terms of closing thoughts, this idea of whatever I think it should be able to do, it should just do. And from a talent pool perspective, you remember Danny and Sandy singing Summer Nights in Greece?
What? Of course.
Okay. I'm not going to sing, but I wonder what he's doing now. To me, the biggest, richest opportunity in talent pools is if you've got a million people in your talent pool, I wonder what they're doing now. How does that relate to what I've got open now? And if whatever I think technology should be able to do, it should just do, then tell me what they're doing now. And so an area that we're helping dozens of clients right now is enriching candidate profiles. Let's take a look at a million people in your talent pool that have been in your talent pool between yesterday and 20 years ago. And we'll use our technology to leverage the internet, their public profiles, adhere to the data compliance in every country, and tell you what they're doing now so we can match them to what you have open now. And I think that's a very exciting area where it's a no-brainer, to Erica's point. Everyone should be trying this.
I love that. So I can already see the subject line of my next email. It's not going to Gen Z, but I'll get somebody with it. Danny and Sandy want to know, .. What are you doing now? This is great stuff. I absolutely love that. So I think the bottom line here is, and Marcello, thank you for sharing that link. We will go fetch it from LinkedIn after this and check it out, and I'll repost it. I think the bottom line here is, folks, software developers have to go to market with a feature and a benefit that is their main thing. But all of the tools that you can get your hands on can do other things. And they go through, these companies go through multiple iterations of how they're going to tell you what you should be doing with this product, because it's the most likely to sell. But every time I get my hands on a new tool, I'm thinking, what else can I do with this? And exactly. That's how I teach my team to think. It's, you know, what would Craig do with this? And I want you all today to look at the apps on your phone, right? And think about, how could I utilize this to touch someone that might need a job, that might be interested in hearing from me, right? How could I find out what they're doing now per Yaz? That's pretty great. I love this. Okay, we've got one last thought from Adrian. Thanks, guys. It's been really informative. Better insight, blah, blah, blah. I learned a lot. Thank you. Allow us to take part from What Jobs London. Excellent. Simply love the out-of-the-box thinking and stories. Okay, this is great. Great feedback, Adrian. Thank you so much. We appreciate everyone joining us today. Thank you to Erica, Will, and Yaz. Thank you, Horsefly and Jovio, for putting this on. You know, we're going to keep doing this, so keep checking back with us. And we're not going to talk about the exact same thing every time, so please come back. We change it up, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks, everyone. It's good to see you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us and diving deep into the world of talent, innovation, and the secrets behind successful careers. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts, so leave us a review or connect with us on social media. We appreciate you. Thank you for joining us.